What's up, Wisconsin? Welcome back, or welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Spent the first half hour today sort of recapping what I'm going to call widespread election lies and election fraud engaged in by MAGA Republicans. And let's remember, I thought historian Heather Cox Richardson, who I interviewed on Friday, helped provide us with a really important distinction between what is election fraud and what is voter fraud, because they're not the same things. Voter fraud is when someone who is not legally entitled to vote votes. That's what it is. And yes, have there been singular instances of this over the last, say, decade or so? Yeah. But even according to the extraordinarily conservative Heritage Foundation, the very authors of Project 2025, who studied 20 years of election data, they only found like 30 instances over 20 years of election data and tens and hundreds of millions of votes cast. They've only found that many instances. There has never, ever, not one scintilla of evidence that any group of people or system or anything else has ever created so much voter fraud, in other words, people not legally entitled to vote voting, that could have ever altered the outcome of any election from dog catcher to president of the United States. There is no evidence of that. Election fraud, the systemic attack on election processes and procedures to make it confusing and to suppress votes and to take from us, the people, the expression of our will as we do so through the voting and the balloting process. That kind of election fraud is engaged almost every day by MAGA Republicans. And that just happened in spades over the last 2 weeks here in the state of Wisconsin, by the mayor of Wausau stealing the Hamburglar of drop boxes, the sheriff of Dodge County bullying local clerks into not using drop boxes, and then, of course, Congressman Tom Tiffany lying about all of it. Jesse from Madison, do you agree? I'm wondering where the attorney general is. Like, let's get busy here.
I got it. There's so many election lies to refute so little time, right? So I just wanted to make 2 points. One is that, you know, the Dodge County Sheriff is sort of right. All good lies are half-truths, right? So, yeah, it is the sheriff's job to do some crime prevention. However, that's not what's going on here. That doesn't fall under this. And correct me if I'm wrong, I don't have a JD. You tell me. I think threatening public officials, elected officials, is itself a crime. So he's actually guilty of that. He should probably be, you know, cleaning up his own backyard. And two, Josh Call is really disappointing. He is the Merrick Garland of Wisconsin, and I do not mean that in a good way. He's done two important things, but seemingly both at the behest of our governor. One is helping restore abortion rights, absolutely mandatory. And two, getting our maps redrawn, also mandatory. Neither of those of his own hand. Not only has he not investigated and prosecuted the fake elector scheme, which is the fraud of felonious of the highest order, but who actually booked the room in the Capitol for those fake electors to meet? Who's the part of the head of this conspiracy? It's none other than Scott Fitzgerald. How come he's not facing felony charges for fraudulently engaging in this conspiracy?
Yeah, all excellent points, Jesse. This is what I think Heather Cox Richardson, and I'm now going to use her construct, mean by election fraud. What Senator Ron Johnson did, what Scott Fitzgerald did, that is election fraud, folks. Troy, from Mount Horeb, you say what this afternoon?
Well, I agree with Jesse, and I would just like to finalize with my, how do we draft Maggie Dawn to be the next primary Josh Call and be our next attorney general?
Thanks so much, Troy. I really appreciate that. I can tell you one thing is for certain. In my many, many years, over a decade, nearly 15 years of government service, I have never taken a job with my eye on my next job. I want to say that again. I never worked in government with an eye to what my next job would be. In other words, it was always a labor of loving service, not a labor of ego. And I will make this comment just very generally. It has been my experience, and I negotiated with a lot of attorneys general when I represented Milwaukee County and prosecuted the civil cases against opioid manufacturers and distributors. And so AGs wanted that money, one, credited to their lawsuits. And by the way, AG Call never brought one of those lawsuits. But they wanted that money going to the state coffers. So again, they could claim credit for that. My experience with AGs generally, I'm not speaking about Josh Call specifically, is this. They tend to be very, very, very much concerned about what their next job in government might be. And those next jobs in government are typically things like governor and senator. Not that there's anything wrong with being ambitious, but often I think the focus, the eye, they take their eye off the ball. It's to do this job to the absolute best of your ability, not to be worried about the next office that you're running for. Very briefly, Jean from Eau Claire, you say what this afternoon?
Boy, I second the other two guys in front of me 100%. And I definitely think that if you would consider running for that position, it'd be a blessing to our state. So thank you very much for taking my call. And boy, I hope you would consider something like that because you would be outstanding. Thank you. Have a good day. Bye.
Thanks, Jean. Very sweet. I appreciate the calls from everybody. Next, I want to bring on our very special guest. Every Monday in the 2:30 to 3 o'clock half-hour block, you're going to hear from different thought leaders, different researchers, different experts from the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Today, I'm really excited to be joined by Brendan Duke, the Senior Director of Economic Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. He previously was the senior advisor at the White House National Economic Council, the staff director of the U.S. Senate Finance Subcommittee on Taxation. He's worked on budget and policy priorities and the U.S. Congressional Joint Economic Committee. I think this gentleman might know a thing or two about taxes and economics here in the United States. Welcome, Brendan. So happy to have you.
I'll try not to bore your guests too much.
Oh, never. They're used to it. I'm an economist. I talk about this nerdy stuff all of the time. And in fact, we do a segment every day called Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money about tax policy, about economics. Because if your interest is childcare, that's about tax policy and economics, right? If you are a conservative and you think we should be doing more on the border and with immigration, guess what that's about, folks? Tax policy and economics. I want to start here, Brendan. Vice President Harris gave a speech last week that I think laid out an absolutely affirmative case that she is a president for working people and for the middle class. And I simply have been able to identify not a single policy proposal from Donald Trump that comes even close to what the vice president is proposing as a package of proposals. We all know you don't get everything on your wish list as a candidate. But even if she's able to accomplish some of the things that she proposes to do, it would so vastly exceed anything that Donald Trump is proposing to do that, quote unquote, may help the middle class. And in fact, much of what he proposes would hurt the middle class and cost Wisconsinites more money. Am I missing the big picture here, or is that a pretty fair assessment of what we're looking at?
That's exactly right, Maggie. So I think Vice President Harris really laid out kind of three planks I saw in her platform there. The first is cutting taxes for 100 million Americans. So expanding the child tax credit, expanding the earned income tax credit for low-wage workers, putting money directly in middle-income Americans' pockets and low-wage workers' pockets, right? The second plank was actually a really pro-business one, which is about expanding the number of startups we have. We have a huge startup boom happening in the United States across the country, including in Wisconsin, and she wants to keep that momentum going. So she wants to make the deduction for startup costs. She wants to multiply that by 10 to $50,000 to just keep that boom in startups going. And then the third part, which she kind of laid out at the end, is the idea of enhancing U.S. manufacturing. So I think that's the last piece that she was putting together. The Biden-Harris administration has really made that a key priority of theirs. She wants to keep that momentum going. And it creates a really nice contrast with what Donald Trump is proposing, which is this giant tariff on your coffee, on your bananas, on medicine, on clothing, on everything you buy, costing a typical family $4,000 a year. Vice President Harris is going to bring back manufacturing, but ask but do that by asking, you know, the wealthy to pay their fair share instead of asking middle-income and low-income Americans to pay more at Walmart and Menards.
Yeah, the Trump tax, right? It's so outstanding to me because at the same time that Donald Trump is proposing to tax people effectively through a consumption tax, right, which is a sales tax of types, that is what tariffs do because it makes everything more expensive to purchase, and that is more expensive to purchase consumer goods. And if any piece of the consumer good that you end up buying is imported, and let's be honest, so much of what we purchase has some component or some part that was imported, all of that gets more expensive for people that consume things, and the people that consume things are the middle class. So he's going to increase, there's going to be a Trump tax on the middle class, and at the same time, he's proposing to cut corporate taxes and taxes on the 100 millionaire and billionaire classes even more than he already has. Why aren't people absolutely rioting in the streets over this? And I mean that metaphorically, not literally people. But it's like, I'm going to tax the middle class more. I'm telling you I'm going to do that. And meanwhile, I'm going to give my billionaire buddies a tax break. And people think that he's, quote, good on the economy. I don't get it.
It doesn't make any sense, especially, you know, he kind of pitches these tariffs as, oh, I care about workers, you know, I care about manufacturing, that sort of thing. And, you know, Vice President Harris and Joe Biden, they have put on tariffs, but what he's proposing is 10 times larger than what he did during his first term. It's an order of magnitude different. I mean, somebody told me, and I think this is the right way to think about it, you know, if you have a headache, you might take an aspirin. That doesn't mean you should take 20 aspirin, is basically right. Where, you know, where this kind of is. And I think a key part of it is, again, if you're talking about certain strategic industries that we want to build up, you know, China's not the nicest country in the world to try to counter them. That makes all the sense in the world. But he's taxing bananas, which we do not produce here. He's taxing coffee, which will, you know, only produce in one state, Hawaii, which is responsible for less than 1% of all the coffee we drink. Tea, mangoes, strawberries. If you've got a toddler who likes to eat berries all the time, which I certainly do, that's just going to drive up your costs. So again, it just doesn't make any sense. You know, if we're, again, you know, just strategically on things like airplanes and stuff like that, okay, like I can get it, but why should Americans pay more at the grocery store so we can cut taxes for big grocery companies? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, strategic tariffs, one of the tortured metaphors I like to use is strategic tariffs are often made as part of an overall, what I'm going to call sort of foreign policy negotiation process. It is, again, in industries that have a lot of tech, or it's surgical, right? You're using a scalpel. It's the chess match of tariffs. That's not what Donald Trump is proposing. He's not talking about a scalpel. He's talking about an axe or just blowing up the chessboard on things that we have not tariffed for a really, really long time. And the last time we did try to lay tariffs at the scale on and plunge the country into a Great Depression, if you don't believe me, just watch the portion of what's the movie with, oh my gosh, oh, Ferris Bueller's Day Off and Ben Stein talking about this, because it was a punchline. Donald Trump's economic promises are a punchline from a 1980s cult classic hit movie. I don't know how to explain it any better than that. But since we've got you, again, my special guest this half hour, Brendan Duke, Senior Director of Economic Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Let's dig in here. I wanted to talk a little bit about these small businesses and helping startups. You mentioned that she wants to increase effectively the tax deduction for startups. We're going to dig a bit into that about home starts, incentives there, the child income tax credit, the earned income tax credit, all with Brendan Duke. When we return here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network, don't miss it.